This is a People First Radio podcast.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
The Assembly of First Nations announced on January the 28th, 2015, the release of a national framework addressing mental wellness among First Nations in Canada. According to the AFN, federal, provincial, and territorial mental wellness programs and services do not currently meet the mental wellness needs and challenges faced by many First Nations communities, and this results in a gap in care. The First Nations Mental Wellness Continuum Framework identifies ways to enhance service coordination among various systems and to support the culturally safe delivery of services.
The First Nations Mental Wellness Continuum Framework is the result of extensive collaboration that began in 2012 among the Assembly of First Nations, Health Canada, and community health leaders, including the National Native Addictions Partnership Foundation and the Native Mental Health Association. The process included a comprehensive mapping of existing mental health and addictions programming that identified gaps and ways to address and avoid them.
Culture is at the heart of the framework, emphasizing First Nations strengths and capacities. The framework also identifies a continuum of services needed to promote mental wellness and provides advice on policy and program changes that will enhance First Nations mental wellness outcomes.
Jennifer Robinson is the Senior Policy Analyst with the Assembly of First Nations. She introduced the First Nations Mental Wellness Continuum Framework to mental health practitioners at a conference in Calgary, Alberta in June 2015. Here's what she had to say.
First and foremost, I want to acknowledge the territory that we're on today, Treaty 7 territory. Originally, I'm from Témiscaming First Nation in Quebec, and I currently live on Algonquin territory in Ottawa. I was living on Coast Salish territory in Vancouver for the past 17 years, so I really, really want to acknowledge the territory that we're on today and be thankful for the opportunity to be here. So the framework is available on the Assembly First Nations website. What I'm sending around is the summary report. There's a much thicker document that includes all of the different themes and the process and all of the different elements of the framework, and it goes much more into depth about it. The framework was launched this year on January 28th of 2015. It was a process that started back in 2012 with the Assembly of First Nations, the National Native Addiction Partnership Foundation, and First Nations Inuit Health Branch. The purpose and the reasoning behind having the framework was because we wanted to strengthen the mental wellness programming that currently First Nations have access to in their own territories and communities. As people here are probably aware, First Nations have a specific amount of funding. It's not necessarily equal or divided amongst the First Nation reserves. To give an example, not every reserve will have a piece of the National Suicide Prevention Strategy money. There will be pots of money in each region, and communities will have to determine how they're going to divide that money up. So it's very key when you're looking at this framework that you have an idea of how, you know, the funding works in community as well, because what we're showing you is not a framework that is fully funded, but it's a framework that aims to allow communities and allow people who are working outside of communities to see our evidence on how we want people to work in the field of mental wellness and how we want people to see our perspective in reshaping and making programs in this area. There was a lot of support from the federal government on this. What we will need to move forward on the framework is support from provincial and territorial governments as well. The aim is also to facilitate a move away from the siloed programming, communities getting money for different projects and only being able to spend it on specific out criteria. This is a little bit about the current status of the mental wellness programming. FNIB, of course, largely focuses on specific mental health and addiction issues. The issues that have come up so far have not resulted in a comprehensive continuum, and that's what we hope that this framework will assist us in doing, is talking to each other and being on the same page about how we want to do this. The gaps, of course, clinical services, a lot of jurisdictional issues come up with that, and access to clinical services in the areas of mental health. Culturally safe services is a very important area. The coordination of care, collaboration and knowledge exchange, and support for people who have serious mental illness and some with concurrent disorders as well. So this is what the continuum essentially looks like. It's the framework itself. It does take some time to kind of look at what the colors mean, look at what the layers of the framework means. But what the aim is to look, of course, is to show a continuum. So everybody here, I imagine, works in this field and knows in detail all of the different struggles and barriers to access that some people might experience. And you might also have experience where there were no barriers to access. So with this, we have tried to take from all the different regions their input and all of the areas and government that might have an impact on mental wellness programming. The continuum services for us include the health promotion, prevention, and community development pieces, early identification and intervention, crisis response, coordination of care and care planning, detox, trauma-informed treatment, and support and aftercare. So what we're hoping by having a framework like this that includes as many people, populations, and our perspective, we're hoping that that will allow people to see themselves within it as well. In the beginning, the very first and the most crucial part to us in looking at the framework is acknowledging the four directions. And the elders that advised our group on this mentioned that hope, belonging, meaning, and purpose were the very outcomes that we're trying to achieve in community, and those outcomes would be outcomes that help in prevention and even when we're doing intervention activities, and of course in recovery. The Mental Health Commission recently released recovery guidelines, and a big component of their recovery guidelines were hope and meaning and belonging and purpose. Some of the words were a bit different, but those are the main four key tenets that they also viewed as important in recovery. The AFN Mental Wellness Committee worked with the Mental Health Commission to include the aspects of this framework and the outcomes that we want to acknowledge in our work to be within their guidelines as well. And it was a very nice fit at the end of the day. I won't go through every single thing, but the continuum important pieces that we would like people to go away with is that the brownish red color at the bottom is culture as foundation. So elders, cultural practitioners, kinship relationships, language, practices, ceremonies, knowledge, and land and values are what is underlying every single aspect of this continuum. And that's why you see that reddish brown color being the base of everything else. So when we're talking about a special population like children, whatever we do with a program for children must be grounded in that culture. It might have to pull in provincial and territorial governments in the program. It might have to, you know, pull in different key aspects, but it has to always be grounded in culture. So that's one of the main aspects of it. Applying the framework, there were some conceptual shifts that we wanted to bring to light. In the blue, evidence that excludes Indigenous worldview, values, and culture is something that was a kind of a deficit-based approach that we have often experienced. And now we're moving more towards a discovery of strength. So Indigenous worldview, values, and culture are the foundation that determine the relevance and how we accept the type of programming that we want in our communities. A focus on inputs for individuals. This really resonates with the mental health continuum as well, because they want to focus on outcomes. They want to focus on strengths that people have on their path to recovery as well. So we saw a lot of cohesion when we were talking to them about this. So those are the main different shifts that we were hoping to achieve. Finally, as I mentioned before, having everything grounded in culture, these were the main outcomes that we want to ensure are available. Mental wellness being a balance of the different areas of spiritual, emotional, mental, and physical. Hope, I'll just go through the definitions quickly because it's something that's very important when we're trying to create our programming and when we try to partner with other organizations, whether they're provincial, on or off, we need to be speaking or at least have an understanding of each other's languages. So hope is for balancing individuals for their future, their families, being grounded in a sense of who their identity is. Part of my teachings has always been to introduce myself, where I'm from, the territories I'm from, where I've lived. And so that's something that I always ensure that I do, and I tell to my children wherever we are, whose territory they're on. A sense of belonging and connectedness with families and community and to their culture. A sense of meaning and understanding on how lives and the lives of families and communities are a part of our creation stories. The creation stories will be different, of course, all across Canada, so it's very important to always acknowledge whose story we're talking about and to have purpose in our daily lives, whether it's through education. When you look at the framework, you'll obviously identify all the social determinants of health that are important to address when you're trying to achieve programming that will achieve these outcomes. So that's something that we realize would resonate with everybody as well who works in this field.
That was Jennifer Robinson, a senior policy analyst with the Assembly of First Nations, speaking about the First Nations Mental Wellness Continuum Framework. She presented at the Canadian Collaborative Mental Health Care Conference in Calgary, Alberta on June 19, 2015. You can find the circular diagram depicting the mental wellness continuum online. Just search for the First Nations Mental Wellness Continuum.
As Jennifer Robinson mentioned, purpose, hope, belonging, and meaning are key concepts and goals in the framework, and the entire structure rests upon culture. Culture is seen as the heart of the framework, emphasizing First Nations strengths and capacities.
First Nations groups in Alberta have been implementing culturally appropriate mental health and addiction programs that are based on First Nations mental wellness continuum. Corrine Everington from the First Nations and Inuit Health Branch at Health Canada and Marilyn Willier of Three Eagles Wellness Society at Sucker Creek First Nations also spoke at the Calgary conference.
We hear first from Corrine Everington, who speaks to the financial and organizational underpinnings of the work, and then from Marilyn Willier, who describes Alberta's successful Mental Health and Addictions Elders Advisory Committee.
We want to highlight the Alberta Mental Health and Addictions Elders Advisory Group as an example of how culture is being used as the foundation to mental wellness programming for First Nations in Alberta. And we'll also briefly describe the context within which the Elders Advisory has been created and continues to exist. We also want to provide a bit of history of the group and describe the commitment that has been made. And then we'll go through the purpose of the Elders Advisory Group and describe some of the priority areas that they have worked on. And then we'll talk about why providing culture as a foundation is so important to the work that we do in mental health and addictions. And finally, we'll provide a specific example of the advisory's work. Just to provide a bit of context, the federal health envelope in Alberta is co-managed within a co-management structure. So the decisions being made about the funding and what the programming is going to look like, it's made jointly by the First Nations Inuit Health Branch and First Nations representatives from each of the three treaty areas. The Health Co-Management Agreement is an agreement between First Nations signatories, so not all First Nation communities are signatories, but a good majority of them are in Alberta. So it's an agreement between those signatories and the Minister of Health that was formed to be a proactive mechanism to improve health outcomes for First Nations in Alberta. And it aims to increase the participation of First Nations in assessing, analyzing, and managing programs and services funded and offered by the First Nations Inuit Health Branch of Alberta Region. So there's six subcommittees that report to the larger co-management committee. And each one of those subcommittees is made up of two representatives from each of the three treaty areas in Alberta, as well as two representatives from the First Nations and Inuit Health Branch. And those subcommittees meet at least quarterly to make a number of different decisions. Certainly some are specific to funding and how that funding will roll out, but it's also decisions made about certain programs, how to roll out certain programs. It's sort of everything that would come to the First Nations Inuit Health Branch here in Alberta. Any requests, all of those go to those subcommittees for discussion and decision-making. At the co-management committee level, It's comprised of two chiefs from each of the three treaty areas, as well as the First Nations Inuit Health Branch, Alberta Regional Executive Officer, and a senior regional director that sit at that table. So the Elders Advisory supports the work of the Mental Health and Addiction Subcommittee. So that's what we want to highlight today. And although the co-management structure is primarily comprised of First Nations representatives, the structure does remain a Western structure, and one that has not adequately represented First Nations culture, traditions, or language. So again, the importance of having the Elders Advisory working with us. So just a little bit of history. During the development of the Regional Prescription Drug Misuse Strategy, which we'll talk a little bit about later, the Mental Health and Addiction Subcommittee recognized that a missing element in the project was the incorporation of First Nation culture. And so there was a decision to really start working and engaging with elders from across the province. So as a result of the advice and guidance from First Nation elders on the development of the Spirit of Healing Alberta First Nations Conquering Prescription Drug Misuse Strategy, the subcommittee determined that in order for any project or programming to be viable, traditions and culture need to be the foundation. So that really was sort of an initial sort of commitment and decision that the subcommittee made moving forward. So now I would just like to ask my co-chair, Marilyn Willier, to come up and continue with the presentation.
So I'm Marilyn Willier. I'm from Treaty 8 from Sucker Creek First Nation. So a long ways from home. Honored to be here on Treaty 7 territory. And thankful and grateful to be presenting on such a wonderful commitment that the subcommittee has made, which is the Elders Advisory. In August of 2013, the subcommittee formally decided to support the creation of the Elders Advisory, and funding was allocated from our subcommittee to do that. The three lead elders, two of which are here today with us, we started off with a prescription drug misuse, and they were the three main elders that were engaged in that process. So we utilized those elders to become, to take it from there and to build on that strategy that we had going, because there was such an amazing outcome from what happened with that strategy. And it became really meaningful and purposeful for our communities when that strategy was rolled out with elder engagement. So the treaty area process from there, the process were to engage our treaty areas, which is Treaty 6, 7, and 8. And they then, in tune, selected six additional elders from each treaty area. So in 2014, the first Elders Advisory meeting was held with our subcommittee to discuss purpose and commence the drafting of their terms of reference. What we looked at then was the purpose. The Elders Advisory advises and works collaboratively with the Mental Health and Addiction Subcommittee of Health Co-Management on all the issues concerning the mental health and well-being First Nations people and communities by providing advice, guidance, and recommendations on the strategic direction of the subcommittee, including First Nations language, knowledge, tradition, culturals and spiritual values, protocols and ceremonies. As a First Nation person myself, it takes on a whole different life of doing things from a Western style. You feel grounded, you feel valued, and it definitely takes on a different life in our community by having the culture as our foundation. Using the Elders Advisory collective wisdom and knowledge to support the appropriate implementation of the vision and mission of the subcommittee. Collaboratively communicating with and participating with other subcommittees and working groups that provide mental health and addiction supports and programming. So we've had a lot of other agencies coming forward, and they really want to utilize the elders. So we're trying to look at how we can broaden that bridge. So some of our priorities, the Elders Advisory have advised and made recommendations on the following. The development of a cultural competency curriculum, the development of a mental health and addictions informational brochure, how to culturally launch a spirit of healing, Alberta First Nations conquering prescription drug misuse, and transition of the current Elders Advisory structure to a regional model which provides a broader support. So one elder now participates at our subcommittee level on a quarterly basis. When we have our meetings, we determined that it was more helpful and gave us better guidance if we had an elder present at the discussions other than after the fact. So we now have an elder advisory representative that comes to all of our meetings directly so that they could be part of the discussions when we make decisions or decide which direction we're going to take. Because we really think that they need to provide that direction up front, not after.
Corrine Everington is with the First Nations and Inuit Health Branch at Health Canada, and Marilyn Willier is with Three Eagles Wellness Society at Sucker Creek First Nations. They were speaking about the implementation of a Mental Health and Addictions Elders Advisory Committee in Alberta.
The First Nations Mental Wellness Continuum Framework identifies ways to enhance service coordination among various systems and to support the culturally safe delivery of services. A group of people involved in the development and use of the First Nations Mental Wellness Continuum Framework presented their experiences to Mental Health Care Conference on June the 19th, 2015 in Calgary, Alberta. People First Radio was there, and we're sharing their presentations in full on our broadcast today. In a moment, we hear from two elders involved with Alberta's Mental Health and Addictions Elders Advisory Committee. Stay with us.
After years of extensive collaboration among government, First Nations and community groups across Canada, a national framework for addressing mental wellness among First Nations was unveiled in January 2015. The First Nations Mental Wellness Continuum Framework identifies ways to enhance service coordination among various systems and to support culturally safe delivery of services.
A group of people involved in the development and use of the First Nations Mental Wellness Continuum Framework spoke at the Canadian Collaborative Mental Health Care Conference in Calgary in June 2015. People First Radio was there, and we've been sharing their presentations on our broadcast today. The group included representatives from Alberta's Mental Health and Addictions Elders Advisory Committee. Here's Elder Reg Crowshoe from the Treaty 7 Management Corporation.
Okay. I'd just like to welcome you all to Treaty 7 Blackfoot Territory, all the different First Nations and all the guests today. I just want to talk a bit about some of the elders' advisory role that we looked at. When the elders talked about giving advice, we were asked to give advice on specific projects. A lot of times we find that Western organizations coming in asking us for advice seem to have Western terms of reference already developed. Their terms of what they need to indigenize or what they want to ask advice on. And a lot of times those terms of reference that come from a Western written context shackle us in how we can give us advice as First Nations. We're aware that there is two different worldviews. There's a worldview, Western worldview, and there's also a First Nation worldview. But I think also we also have to be aware, when we look at Western worldview and philosophy, there is Western practice that allows us to give and take rights and privileges and validate what's real. And that's a Western management system that we can navigate, whether through meetings or organizations, to be able to develop programs and practices that allow us to develop those terms of reference. And we're all familiar with that. We speak the language, we read and write, so we're familiar with Western concepts of management. But when the elders were talking about giving advice, they said, we have our own worldviews, and many different worldviews for oral First Nation people across the country. But we also do have an oral management system, a system that we can give rights and privileges and validate what's real, validate what we need to validate from our perspective, First Nation perspective. And it's an oral management system. And one of the things, the key issues is, how do we navigate that oral management systems? How do we give rights and privileges? How do we give advice? Those are part of our oral management systems, and those are what the elders are talking about. If we're going to give advice, we need to understand those management systems and give advice based on those terms of reference that came from that oral management system that's based in a oral worldview. Then you're giving the true advice. When we look at participating with Western written management system, then the terms of reference come from a different worldview. When they were talking about the concepts of cultural competency and looking at cultural safety, we needed to look at those concepts from that oral management system and navigate through that system to get the right advice, the right direction that will help our people, because our people still believe in who we are, still believe in our worldview, and still practice and believe those oral management systems. And it's a whole different world when you go into a Western management system. We, a while ago, I had a chance to work with Willie Ermine, and we were working with elders and the health practitioners. The health practitioners wanted the elders to give advice or information, knowledge, so that they can treat First Nation people a lot better, give them better treatment. And the elders supported the concept. They agreed on it. But once they started into the project, the Western practitioners had the terms, but they also developed the ethics for the research. They developed all what we needed to develop. And as the elders followed and gave advice or gave knowledge, at one point the elders stepped back and they said, we don't want to be a part of this project anymore. We don't want to be included. And well, one elder put it this way. He said, we give all our knowledge, and the Western practitioners are getting fatter on our knowledge, and we're going to wither away till there's nothing left. So I had a discussion with them after that and asked them what were some of the solutions. And the elders talked about saying, well, if you look at Western knowledge base, the research came from a Western knowledge base. And in Western concepts, that knowledge base has a maintenance system. They have resources, they have researchers, they have programs, programmers. They have all what they need to maintain that Western knowledge base. So we keep giving that Western knowledge base information and they collect it all. What about our oral knowledge base? We don't have resources, we don't have researchers, people that speak our language, people that know our management systems and rights and privileges. that keeps dwindling. And if we keep giving our advice away, then we're going to disappear. We need to be creative to say, how do we take those resources and culturally translate and culturally interpret those resources to start supporting our oral management systems and our worldviews and our elders to do the right job, to be able to give advice from our First Nation perspective. I think those are the basic principles that the elders looked at when they started working with the mental health project. They took the project and they talked about the advice coming from that first true First Nation perspective. But at the same time, they went through the pipe ceremonies and some of the oral management practices, implementation practices, and they said, well, this is First Nation knowledge. This is First Nation ownership of knowledge, understanding, and advice. And this is how we're going to pass it over so that organizations can look at working in the right direction. And those were some of the basic principles that the elders used when they started supporting the mental health program. So that's just a bit of a background from our First Nation perspective on how we looked at our language, our practices, our belief systems, and how we might look at supporting Western organizations in working together to achieve the goals that we're looking at. All goals of a good life are always the same, but how do we get there? You might want to say, well, on one side we have a Mac system and on the other side is an IBM system. Both can't talk to each other, but the goals and objectives are the same. So when we're looking at oral management systems and looking at Western written systems, we need to find parallels so that we can achieve the kind of goals we need to achieve. And those parallels become best practices when we're working between the two cultures.
Reg Kroshu is an elder from the Treaty 7 Management Corporation. Treaty 7 is an agreement between the tribes of the Blackfoot Confederacy and the Crown. Reg Kroshu is a Treaty 7 regional representative on Alberta's Mental Health and Addictions Elders Advisory Committee.
The work of the Elders Advisory Committee, which includes representation from all three treaty areas in Alberta, is also considered to be a part of the recently unveiled First Nations Mental Wellness Continuum Framework. The national framework emphasizes culture and the central concepts of purpose, hope, belonging, and meaning. A group of people involved in the development and use of the First Nations Mental Wellness Continuum Framework presented their experiences to a mental health care conference on June the 19th, 2015, in Calgary, Alberta. We've been sharing those presentations today. We just heard from Reg Kroshu, an elder from Treaty 7 First Nations. Here's Dustin Twin, an elder with Treaty 8 First Nations.
Good afternoon. I'm also grateful to be in our friend's territory from Treaty 7. I'm from northern Alberta. It's considered north, but Lesser Slave Lake on the map is halfway up the province. So Treaty 8 territory begins north of the Athabasca River. And how we became involved in this process, we were approached by FNIB to appoint or recommend some elders to be on this process, and I happened to be the elders coordinator for Treaty 8, so I became involved by appointment, by volunteerism, I guess. But we have 24 nations in our territory, and we have 6 tribal groups, and hence the number six. We chose one elder from each of the tribal councils. We have four tribes in our territory. We have the Beaver Indians, Chipewyan, the Cree, and the Dene. So we have a representative from each tribe on the elders' advisory committee. We come from First Nations. We live in our First Nations, and we're aware of the issues that affect our people. So when we became involved in this, it's just a process that we are trying to improve the lives of our people, our youth, and unfortunately, drug misuse is one of the major afflictions that we're faced with today, unfortunately. It comes from traumas that our people have endured along the way, like residential school. I bring it up because the TRC is it's out front and center, and some of us that are on the committee, like my friend Reg, we're survivors of the residential school system. So, and in our own ways, we heal ourselves through our culture, our language, and the Western ways also. Our elders up north tell us to use the best practices from Western culture, from Eastern culture, and from our culture. So we practice the best medicines that we learn from these different cultures. And we actually, our elders teach us to share our knowledge, our medicines. And we have medicine teaching, like we had one last year and we're having one this year, and we're inviting our friend Reg to come up there. And our elders, our knowledge keepers, will share our traditional medicines with us. And that's how we deal with some of the mental illnesses that affect our people, is through our medicines also, our traditional medicines and our traditional cultural practices. But one of the teachings of our elders from our committee up north, he passed away 2 months ago, and he was 87 years old. And he couldn't speak English. He spoke Cree. But he passed on a teaching to our group that what he sees is a lack of kindness in our communities with our own people, in between each other. And so these teachings I get from the elders, I call them elders, they're 80s and 90s. So we keep their teachings alive and pass them on. The other important factor in this whole process is youth. We include the youth in some of our gatherings, our teachings, so they can carry on the work, I guess, of the elders that share the teachings. And it seems to be working successfully. In some of our communities, they've adopted the strategy from the prescription drug misuse, and they've asked some of us to go help their community with our sharing our healing stories, our healing journeys. I'm familiar with Treaty 7 territory because I went to university here and at the U of C when I began my healing journey. And I was in psychology. I was going to become a psychologist, but when I found out how sick I was, I switched pretty fast and went to general studies and sociology. Instead of talking about the importance of education to my grandchildren, I had to be a role model and actually attend university. So, but in Alberta, we have our own protocols in Treaty 6, 7, and 8. I'm not going to speak for Treaty 6, but we also work together on the major issues that impact us. And we have, make partnerships, like with FNAI. They care for the same, try to find solutions to issues that affect our First Nations. And we also reach out to form partnerships with the province. Any organization, even private industry, that wants to work with our First Nations to prepare our people or to help them deal with the issues so that they can become productive First Nation members and share in the economy of Alberta, hence Canada. So it's just some of the practices we use up in Treaty 8. And we have our friends from Treaty 6 and 7 that we work well together. We respect each other's protocols, our languages, and we work as a province with different organizations, even AFN. Now we're pretty independent here in Alberta, which I don't mind saying, but we respect our Native organizations as well, and we're thankful for them.
That was Dustin Twin, an elder with Treaty 8 First Nations. He spoke in Calgary, Alberta on June 19, 2015 as a part of a series of presentations related to mental wellness and addiction services among First Nations.
Here's more from Dustin Twin and from Reg Croshew as they answer questions about the interaction between medical professionals and traditional health providers in First Nations communities.
On my nation, there's actually two doctors that come there for 3 days a week. They advise some of their patients to see an elder to talk about some of the trauma instead of always prescribing medication. But there's also some up north, like Big Stone, Cree. They also have doctors that come up there. And in our territory, there's maybe four or five nations that I know of that doctors come to the nation and see their patients there and advise them to either see an elder or practice some of our traditional medicines, to use some of our traditional medicines.
Also, in Treaty 7, we do have health centers in each of the First Nations. And through those health centers, they coordinate the medical staff that come to these centers to work with the community, but also to work with talk to some of the elders. So in a Western context, that service is available. When we look at it from our oral perspectives, our ceremonies and our practices for healing or practices to give advice, those are ceremonies that happen. And in our culture, in our language. And lately, especially in some of the ceremonies, we see a lot of people coming in with prescription drugs, and suicide, having those hard times and asking for help. So in those ceremonies, they're gauging the number of people in the communities that are coming for advice. Lately, there's been a lot of cancer and prescription drugs and the suicides that are happening, but the ceremonials that run the ceremonies are gauging information there also. But at the same time, we're starting to see some of the Western practitioners engage with some of these ceremonialists to have discussions or come to the ceremonies. So that's starting to happen. But I think we need to do more of that cross-cultural communication of the two systems so that we can start understanding. I know within, for example, in the cancer, they want to collect data. They're collecting data from First Nation communities. But another place to collect data that the elders came back with said, Well, our ceremonies were collecting data, but nobody ever approaches us for that data. So it's those parallels we need to start looking at, working.
We also try and teach our youth cultural ways to deal with mental illnesses. And we're actually, me and my friend Marilyn are coordinating an Alberta-wide youth, First Nation youth gathering in Muscogees is the host. So we talk about mental wellness to them, and that there's alternatives to approach elders, the protocols, and that they have elders in their First Nations they can approach instead of, as an alternative to Western medicine.
Dustin Twin is an elder with Treaty 8 First Nations, and Reg Crowshoe is an elder with Treaty 7 First Nations. They're both members of Alberta's Mental Health and Addictions Elders Advisory Committee, a group established to facilitate culturally appropriate mental wellness and addiction services to First Nations peoples in Alberta. They spoke in Calgary, Alberta on June 19, 2015 at the Canadian Collaborative Mental Health Care Conference.
You can find out more about the Canadian Collaborative Mental Health Care Conference online at sharedcare.ca, and that's shared-care.ca. You can find out more about the First Nations Mental Wellness Continuum Framework online at the Assembly of First Nations website, afn.ca.
People First Radio is an initiative of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society and broadcast on CHLY 101.7, radio from Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed are not necessarily those of the partnering organizations. Listen to People First Radio on demand. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpages.